Gentlemen, you ready?
Ready.
Mr. Crowley, on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Bauer.
May it please the court, my name is Martin Crowley, and I represent appellant Carolyn Bauer. I'd like to reserve about 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may.
Okay, I'll watch the clock.
I read a quote the other day, "Respect for the rule of law makes a free society possible. Without it, society could devolve into tyranny on the one hand or anarchy on the other. Lawyers help to keep the rule of law, help the rule of law to function. It could not exist without them." That's why I'm here. Respect for the rule of law. If government officials get up or change the laws that are created by the people's elected representatives, we move in the direction of tyranny. Former Secretary of State Dean Heller admitted in his deposition that virtually none of the information requested on the first page of the campaign expense reports is required by law, and there is nothing on there to tell a candidate of this fact. Mr. Heller testified before the Assembly Committee that if someone didn't put in the ending balances, the report would not be deemed incomplete. Mr. Heller further testified that he only put that on the forms for the convenience of the public, the media and the curious public. Worse than this is the fact that they put the signature line under penalty of perjury at the bottom of that first page. This info is not required by law, and thus you cannot be required to declare it to be true and accurate as it states there. The law only requires that you declare contributions or expenses in excess of $100 and that you sign the report under penalty of perjury.
So, counsel, I have what is probably an oversimplification of the issue. If, in fact, as it is represented in your briefs, your client had no contributions and had no expenses, what is the legal issue upon which she claims she does not have to zero out that form, sign it off like every other person who runs for office?
Because there's no statute that compels you to put a zero on the form. The statute only requires you to report if you received contributions in excess of $100 or expenses in excess of $100. Thus, your only legal requirement is to report those campaign contributions or expenditures in excess of that amount. If you don't have those on there, it has to be assumed as a matter of law that you didn't receive any.
Don't you have to, if you received them, let's say you received 20 contributions of $90, don't you have to report $180 total? You know, you don't have to identify the contributors, but you do have to put the total amount that you received in there.
Actually, no.
You don't?
Only if there's an aggregate over $100 from an individual contributor.
I know the form did change to where they took off the where it says total amount of 100 or less, total expenditures of 100 or less. That was at least this last form, I believe, that I filled out, that was taken off.
I think you're right on that, Judge. Nevertheless, they didn't do that in 2002.
Mr. Crowley, let me ask you, and I understand your point on this. My concern is how your client filled out this form and taken the Fifth Amendment on the face of it. Now, the analogy that comes to my mind is we all have to file federal income tax returns, and you can't decline under the Fifth Amendment to file a federal income tax return because the earnings report might tend to incriminate you. How is that analogy any different to this form? Wouldn't your client have to complete it anyway, and the Fifth Amendment's not applicable here?
I agree in part and disagree in part.
Okay.
If the person is confused, and what she stated in her letter to Secretary Heller was that if I sign this under penalty of perjury and the form itself is illegal, can I be held liable for the statements therein? And granted, the rambling letter and writing across the form like that wouldn't have been advisable, and certainly had she had legal counsel at that time, she might have done better for herself, and we might not be here. But she did, if you note in the conclusion of her letter, she states that I'm presenting this information and I swear to this information to be true. So she does make an oath in her filing report that was submitted to the Secretary of State on the date that it was due.
But is it the Secretary of State's obligation to answer every inquiry from every candidate for public office on specifics? I mean, legal obligation to do that, or is it the candidate's obligation once you choose to run for office, like the three of us do and fill out these forms as well, to go seek somebody like an expertise like you would have to advise her on how to handle this situation.
No, I don't think that there would be an absolute duty on the part of the Secretary of State to answer every question. But if the Secretary of State's office attempts to answer, they have a duty to answer truthfully. And in the letter on September 18, 2002, from the Secretary of State's Christy Geiser, she did not answer truthfully. She stated in her letter that all of the information was required by law, and that was not true. And she could have clarified that very easily. These answers that were given in the depositions many years later were much clearer when I asked them directly, do you have to put that information in there? No, it's not required by law. And Mr. Heller had said the same thing to the Assembly when he was testifying in front of the Assembly. Ms. Bauer did the only thing she thought reasonable. She asked the Secretary of State for advice. She got a response back that was not true. And I think that's one of the biggest problems in this case, is that she was misled by the Secretary of State's office as to what she had to do.
I'm a little confused on what she felt the self-incrimination was going to be in this case. I mean, it's one thing to object to a form and say that it's not legally sound, but I'm not exactly sure what the ramification is with respect to incrimination, self-incrimination.
Yeah, and that's easy to understand, Justice Sata, because of the fact that, you know, what would be an incrimination if you just signed the form? But if you read her letter, she just says, I don't know, does that expose me to criminal liability if it's an illegal form? And obviously there's some confusion in this person's mind when she's doing this. Certainly, I can't see where anyone could be subjected to criminal liability if they just signed the blank form. But there again, she didn't ask me back then. Should I continue?
Yes. It's an undisputed fact that the signature line on the reports is not in the proper place. You only have to verify the accuracy of the contributions and expenditures in excess of $100, and that's what the law requires.
So what they should have is a form that has contributions in excess of $100, and then you list those, just like there is in that form. And at the end of that, there should be a place to declare the foregoing is true under penalty of perjury. But the Secretary of State's form doesn't do that. It puts the affirmation on the page where all the information being requested is not required by law. So that's one of the big issues that I have with their form and with the case. Even though the only thing that the law requires is the reporting of the contributions and expenditures in excess of $100, the Secretary of State freely admits that no one even bothered to ask Ms. Bauer if she had any contributions and expenditures in excess of $100. Now, when the only thing that the law requires is the reporting of contributions and expenditures in excess of $100, but they don't even inquire if she had any, this is itself a violation of the law. The law mandates that an investigation be taken before prosecution. Mr. Heller admitted that he assumed there probably was an investigation in his deposition. Ms. Bauer, not being a lawyer, stated on her timely filed reports that she had questions about the legality of the form she was given. She questioned whether she signed the form and it was illegal, would she be subject to criminal prosecution, as we discussed. That's a fair question, at least for if you consider a lay person in her circumstances. But instead of answering that legitimate question, Ms. Geiser gave Ms. Bauer false information in her September 18, 2002 letter. How can an office like the Secretary of State deem the contribution and expense reports not properly filled out when the office later admits that the information on the first page is not even required by law? The state admits that the reports were timely filed. They simply claim that in their view, they were incomplete. So the Secretary of State purposely misled Ms. Bauer in this regard. Ms. Geiser insists the completion, and this is a quote, of the forms is mandatory, not optional, close quote. This is not true. Years later in her deposition, Geiser admits that the statement isn't true, and yet they prosecute Ms. Bauer. Ms. Bauer responded to the Geiser letter just a few days after. She quoted Mr. Heller as publicly stating that the forms are, quote, confusing. And yet the Secretary of State does nothing to clear up the confusion by informing the candidate what the law requires and what is merely optional. Mr. Heller admitted this in his deposition. Mr. Heller further testified that in every legislative session, they attempt to amend the laws to lessen the confusion, but that there are always going to be areas that cause confusion. Well, of course there is. And as long as they don't tell the truth, It will be worse than confusing. It is intentionally misleading. Ms. Bauer further indicated in her 927-02 letter that if the Secretary of State would simply answer her questions, she will be able to return her report signed under oath. Not only did she not get a response to that letter, Mr. Heller testified that he didn't even recall having seen that letter attached to Ms. Bauer's timely filed campaign and expense report. Without receiving an answer to her numerous questions, Ms. Bauer could only file her report number two on time with the same questions that she had on the first report. I think that's a good place to stop.
You have about 4 minutes and 50 seconds left.
Thank you.
Mr. Leslie.
Good morning, Justices, and thank you for the opportunity to appear as a respondent. Sometimes this helps to level the playing field somewhat when we don't have the chance of filing the last brief. May I introduce myself, Clark G. Leslie. I represent the respondent, Secretary of State, in this matter. I'm from the Office of the Attorney General. What I would like to do is present what I think are 10 matters that are beyond dispute in this case. But before I do so, my esteemed colleague mentioned that he read a quote about respect for the rule of law. That is, of course, why we are here. And that is one of the major issues in this case, whether or not Ms. Bauer understood the importance and the responsibility of a candidate to provide the Nevada electorate with information upon which they can then make a reasoned choice. If I were presenting this case in front of a jury, I would have had this blown up. But respect for the rule of law. I would invite the jury's attention to what is found at page 77 of the record. This is the first CNE report that was filed in August of 2002. Even from this distance, it is apparent and plain to the court, this is no attempt to respect the rule of law. Other than her name and a designation in capital letters of WSD1, she doesn't even provide her address, her telephone number, her email address, nor does she make any effort to fill in one single box. Now, we start from that point, if I may, Justices, and at this point, I would like to present to you 10 considerations that I think are compelling in this case. As the district court pointed out, the candidate filed and signed the candidate acknowledgement form on May the 20th, 2002, that expressly advised her that she would be required as a matter of law to file 3 contribution and expense reports upon certain dates, and that she would be exposed to civil penalties if she did not. She saw that form, she signed it, and as the district court pointed out, in essence, she had made a contract with the people of the state of Nevada because she voluntarily interjected herself into the electoral process to abide by the laws, which, by the way, she wanted to be a Nevada state senator, she would be required to do if she were elected to office. Second, Ms. Bauer never sought on May 20th, 2002, or at any time during the electoral process, even the slightest effort to obtain any type of an opinion from an attorney, nor did she seek what is clearly found in the law in terms of an expeditious review of her case. As elected officials, you know that there is a process, and anyone that runs really is aware of this. For example, you think that an opponent does not meet the residential requirements. If you had to wait for the normal course of law to challenge that, you would probably not succeed in doing what you needed to do in terms of proving a lack of qualification. So there is an expeditious process in NRCP 65B, I believe, that permits the court to put this on the fast track. Not only did she not do that, even though, as we explain later, she had some information in this regard, the record is devoid that she even bothered to contact an attorney. Number 3, undisputed. She never signed any of the three contribution and expense reports, none of them.
Let me just ask this question. If she had signed these reports, would that have satisfied it, even though she didn't fill in the blanks? Or at least it would have defeated the motion for summary judgment until you could have proven that you received a contribution in excess of 100 or spent money in excess of 100.
I agree with the second comment that you made, Justice Cherry, that had she signed it, she would have gotten past the motion for summary judgment. And while in respect to what Mr. Crowley had mentioned in terms of do you or do you not put figures in the lines and so forth, Ms. Geiser testified at page 18 of her deposition, there was an expectation that you put zeros. I have referred this court to several matters in the Nevada Administrative Code and case law, which indicates a blank is not the equivalent of data. A blank says nothing. It tells the electorate nothing. It doesn't say whether you have zero or you have a million. It is a nullity. And our position would be that by doing that, that is engaging in the negative act of not providing data and, more importantly, not signing any of the documents, therefore giving it no credence and no purpose or validity, she has deprived the Nevada electorate of what the clear intent of the statute is.
What if she filled in the blanks but didn't sign?
The signature is of vital importance. That would have been the same as filing an income tax form without signing it. And we have referenced in our brief the parallel nature of tax evasion cases where the U.S., where the federal courts have consistently stated filing an incomplete form, filing a form that is not signed, filing a form that does not provide all the necessary information is the same as filing nothing at all. We knew that in 2004, Ms. Bauer, and this is point number four, who was a litigant and a party in Ballard, the Ballard case involving the Nevada Commission on Ethics, she knew at that point that the electoral statutes would be defined under the plain language provisions of statutory interpretation, and she has had an opportunity since 2004 to amend her contribution and expense reports, 2004, 2005, 2006, and the beginning of 2007, all passed, and she made no effort after the information that she received as a litigant in this court's determination and holding in Ballard to do anything about what she had presented. We know from the motion for summary judgment order, which is found at page 198 of the record, that was drafted by the district court. There were no proposed orders in that regard. That court found she knew she was breaking the law. And that determination was made by the district court because she signed the candidate acknowledgement form. Secondly, that court pointedly and correctly pointed out, had she issues with the reporting requirements or the contribution and expense reports, the district court pointed out she should have challenged or made questions about that before she signed the form and not after. And although we find in one of her commentaries in accompanying the first contribution and expense report that was filed in August of 2002 that she has concerns and confusions about the Federal Reserve note system and about gold and silver, apparently she had no problem discerning what a dollar was when she paid the filing fee. She also has been charged by the district court in its order that when she signed the acknowledgement, she agreed to the consequences. And that brings us back to respect for the law, as Mr. Crowley has pointed out, and it also focuses our attention once again, not where Mr. Crowley would like to go, but where this case takes us. I believe one of the advocates this morning talked about a case that started out with simple facts and then became a jumble. Let us not be distracted from the simple fact that this is an individual who did two things. After the lawsuit was filed, she then told us in the discovery process that she didn't have any contributions and she didn't have any expenses. But you will also note in the record as to contribution and expense reports number one, number two, or number three, she never disclosed that fact. The record is devoid of her telling anyone.
Well, wouldn't she have to disclose the filing fee as an expense in her campaign form?
She certainly would, and she did not. But in terms of where the, well, that is certainly true, and I would add to that that the fact that she didn't disclose the absence of contribution or expense declaration of funding until after the lawsuit was filed, as we discuss under justiciability, basically limits what we're looking at here today to not the abstractions and the suggestions of Mr. Crowley and his client, Ms. Bauer, but to an individual who, during all of this period of time, at the end of the first, the second, and the third report, when she sat down to write this, if she is believed, she had no expenses and no contributions other than the filing fee, as you pointed out, Justice Gibbons, which she didn't declare.
Well, what is the filing fee for state senator? What was it at that time? Do you recall?
I looked that up.
Is it over $100 is my question?
Yeah. Yes.
No.
I believe it is.
$100.
Oh, okay. $100. Okay. All right. And it's been a bit more since then. Regardless of the amount of money and whether or not that should or should not have been put on the form, the point I'm trying to make is that she knew when she was sitting down and filing out each of these that she was going to take, as far as her mind knew, she had no contributions, and there's no dispute about that. Either you get something of value or you don't, as that's defined under 294.007, and it's a very broad and expansive definition, or not. But instead of simply stating, I don't have any C's or any E's, any contributions or any expenses, I'm a little comfortable about signing this, and then doing what any reasonable person would, and that's getting legal advice, she does what you saw, for example, at page 77 with these interlineations. For the second report, she stamped these questions that she demanded be answered, and on the third one, she once again took the constitutional oath.
Does the Secretary of State have any obligation to answer those questions when posed by a candidate?
Justice Gibbons, the answer to that is no. The Secretary of State is not in the job of providing legal advice. Someone calls and says, can I fax this report in? We're going to answer that question. How much do I have to pay? Those kind of questions, you know, dates, times, and places, the Secretary of State will respond. Secretary of State is not going to respond to a question like, if I don't do this, am I committing an act of perjury? If I don't understand what the Federal Reserve note system is, am I going to be having a problem if I sign this form? And in terms of a supposed religious objection to filing under penalty of perjury, I would respectfully invite the attention of this court to the candidate's declaration, the declaration of candidacy, where that document indicates that she is affirming or otherwise promising under penalty of perjury that the information on that form is correct, and that's the residential information to establish residency requirements that are necessary for a candidate. So she is not loath to sign documents under penalty of perjury when it forwards or it promotes her interests, but when she, and I would say, has no respect for the rule of law and wants to try to get around what is an obvious form and requirement of a candidate, then she takes an issue with it.
Mr. Lester, let me ask you this. Mr. Crowley made a point that this very first page of the form, the summary form, is not required by statute. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely not. NRS 294A.120 does require candidates to provide a contribution form. 294A.200 requires an expense form. And 294A.350, a very important statute that I would emphasize this court look at, mandates that these forms be filed even if among other things, the candidate has no contributions and has no expenses.
Do they require this page one summary sheet, or do they just require the rest of the forms where it has the more detailed forms versus the summary? His argument, I believe, was it was the summary page is not required by statute, therefore the signature line shouldn't have been on the summary page, and it caused confusion.
Thank you for clarifying that for me, because I didn't completely understand it. The contribution and expense report form was provided to Ms. Bauer at the time that she signed the candidate's acknowledgement. It included the face sheet that you've alluded to, Justice Gibbons, and yes, she would have had to provide the entire packet of information, including that face sheet. That's the sheet that has the signature. This is a nullity. She might as well have filed the morning paper without signing it. So the answer to your question is yes. You can't manufacture issues just for the purpose of feeding a motion for summary judgment. I think that's been done here. I briefly like to go through the questions that were posed by this panel, if I can.
You've only got 12 seconds left.
Okay. Justice Saida talked about a statute requiring or not requiring a zero, and we point out in our brief where other statutory schema do provide for that.
You can finish your thought.
Thank you. Justice Gibbons mentioned about a federal income tax form, and I do mention that analysis in the brief, and I think it is very relevant, and I thank the justice for that. In terms of making an oath, she never made one that's valid. The necessary proponents of a valid oath.
Make this your last point, please.
All right. Requires that the individual acknowledge that he or she is doing so under pains and penalty of perjury. And while she does express her religious concerns in regards to that signature, it does not pass statutory muster in terms of a signature that's required by law. On behalf of the Secretary of State, thank you very much, Your Honors.
Rebuttal, Mr. Crowley. Mr. Crowley, on behalf of the appellant, for rebuttal.
It's interesting. You asked the question about whether that form is statutorily required. There's no reference to a statute by counsel. What statute does the state rely upon that makes that page one legal? Because Mr. Heller testified in his deposition under oath that it's not required. I asked him, and we were clear on that question, that the information required in the summary, requested in the summary, is not required by state law. We were very clear on that, and I asked Ms. Geiser that as well. So there's no law that requires that information. So that much is clear. Council holds up the campaign report, and of course, that's that same first page that he's holding up there. He says there's no effort to fill out one single box. Well, that's because the law doesn't require to fill any of that information for the totals in there. Those are totals, totals, and totals. The law doesn't mandate that. And
what about the address part at the top? Is that required to fill that out?
Well, the statutes don't say anything about putting your address on.
Well, you have to put it on in your declaration of candidacy form so they can verify you live in the district. You
know, but there's nothing in the statute that talks about a person's address. But we can't forget that there were several pages attached to that first page. It's not just the only part. There's an entire correspondence attached to that with her address on it and her signature and everything that she attached to that.
But even if she didn't do anything on the first page, as far as the summary is concerned, she could have put a zero on the as far as the contributions and a zero as far as expenses, and that would have satisfied at least what you're saying as far as the statute. Because there are statutes for expenses and for contributions.
Could have, Justice, and that's correct. But the law does not mandate it. And I refer in my reply brief that it's very easy to look on the Secretary of State's website and find several candidates' forms that have been filed in recent years, including Mr. Miller's, that have blanks on them. So there's nobody being prosecuted for leaving blanks on their forms, because the law doesn't say anything about leaving anything blank.
But there's substantial compliance with most of those, because I agree with you. I review those forms all the time, and at least there's substantial compliance. People fill out the major part. Do you know exactly what they were able to get from contributors and what they expended?
Yeah. And Mr. Crowley, let me ask you this. On page 117 of the record, it's the expenses of $100 or less. Are you saying that this form is superfluous, that although you don't have, on the form itself, you don't have to list the name or anything else, but you're supposed to list the amount and that information there. So date of the expense and things like that. So a filing fee of $100 theoretically would have to be reported on this page here.
No, because that page isn't required. Mr. Heller made that clear in his deposition.
Okay, so the page is superfluous as far as what the law requires.
Yes, and he testified as much. And the interesting part about that zeros thing, though, you know, I have to emphasize that the law does not require a candidate to state that they have received no contributions and have had no expenses. Now, the Secretary of State didn't put that on his form. And if that's what the question they wanted to have answered, they should have put that on there. Of course, they should get legislative approval for what they put in the form, and that's what we're here today for. If you look in the Assembly minutes and the testimony there, they had quite a discussion with Assemblyman Anderson about, are you putting things on there? Are you going to keep putting things on there that aren't required by law? And Mr. Heller kind of dodged the question about, is he going to continue to do that? And I don't think the Secretary of State's office should be able to, you know, to skirt the law and then hammer somebody by prosecution for not filling out their form that doesn't comply with the law. As far as the suggestion that after 2004 that the decision in the ethics case, I really am confused about that. This is years after this took place, and they're saying that she could have amended and signed and did a report. Reports again after 2004, they'd already filed their lawsuit, and there's no place in this lawsuit that they ever make a request that I'm aware of that she amend her forms and that they would just drop the whole thing. That didn't happen in the course of this case. They plowed forward with gusto. There was a issue about Ms. Geiser and the candidate's form or acknowledgement form that came up. In her deposition, she said that the candidate's acknowledgement form did not make clear that a candidate who did not have either a contribution or an expense of over $100 had to file a report. And I asked her that at page 295 of volume 2 in Geiser deposition page 48, if you want to reference that. She says that it did not make it clear whether she had to or not have to, and she says that is kind of a question in a person's mind if they didn't have those. So I would just suggest that in closing, that we really can't have the Secretary of State's office and Attorney General's office prosecuting these cases with vigor when they have muddied up the matters, when someone has asked for information and they've been given, in return, misleading statements and distortions of the law from the representatives of the state agency, and then to go after that person based on those misrepresentations, I think is a gross miscarriage of justice and warrants a reversal in this matter.
Well, thank you to both counsel for your fine arguments and your briefs in this matter. This case will stand submitted. And have